This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
136 FM Talk 106.5 and a Midday Mobile on this Thursday. And once again, as I said, we talked to the congressman last hour. We talked to Cal earlier. We'll be talking to my friend Robert Kennedy Jr., another veteran, here in just a second. If you know somebody, give them a call. Just see how they're doing. Like I said, a couple of them I've been annoying lately, but in a good way, because I can sense how they're doing, and just calling them. It doesn't have to be a huge conversation. Some nights it has been. Some nights it's pretty quick. But checking on them, and then the resources out there, if you yourself need those resources or you have somebody in need, you know, the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. You can also send a text message to 838-255 if you want to do it that way as well, or go to veteranscrisisline.net online, or just look for Veterans Crisis Line, and those resources and local resources available through the VA and other groups out there. So remember that. And looking through a text here, a bunch of them coming in, but I want to, my man Keith here, Keith, who is a veteran and who has served, he said, brother, not sure if I told you before, but when I deployed to Afghanistan with the 3rd SFG, so that'd be a special forces group, it was our job to train the ANA, the Afghan National Army, and the ANAP, Afghan National Auxiliary Police. The ones who actually made it through the basic training would be considered mentally deficient in a modern society. They were not the best and brightest of Afghanistan, to say the least. You know, we're talking about why those folks didn't, you know, why the security forces didn't, they weren't stickier there. You know, I looked at it and said, it's a fair question to ask. You ask, you know, it's something beyond, they're all Afghans, right? I mean, even though there's other groups, but I mean, they're Afghans that cobbled together country, but they're Afghans in the Taliban, they're Afghans in the security forces. Security forces had the weapons they need. Lord knows we spent $100 billion training them and outfitting them. They had the equipment, but something was different. Right. And we saw that. And we saw how quickly they folded. All right. Let's talk more about the situation in Afghanistan with Robert Kennedy Jr. from Kennedy for Alabama and a veteran of the U.S. Navy. And he joins us now. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Sean. What's up today?
You know, I'm all right. But this is tough. I know it's tough for me as a civilian. I imagine you, like my other friends that are veterans, it's been a tough week.
Yeah, it's interesting. Right. First of all, in terms of full disclosure, I'm a Navy guy, right? And so my shipboard tours were on an amphibious troop transport, and I also ran the military department on a combat boiler. So I've never spent any time on the ground. But from having my conversations with the people who actually spent time on the ground in both Iraq and Afghanistan, there are people who are hurt right now, right? There are people who are really just in a state of sadness, and we need to keep them, as well as their families, and our thoughts and prayers, much to the point that was communicated by your prior guest. We just want to make sure that anger doesn't spill out and go somewhere where it should go.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to keep that messaging going here for as long as it takes and even longer. On the situation, so President Biden in a comment, I don't know if it was yesterday's or day before, but when President Biden basically, I felt like, set up a false choice here. In other words, he was saying to people, and I'm one of those people that have wanted to have the troops home and get people out of Afghanistan. The way he set it up, in so many words, was, okay, well, you wanted it. This is what you're getting. You can't, now this is, and I think that's a false choice, that this is the only way to remove ourselves from Afghanistan. This is a disaster, Robert. I mean, this is a disaster.
You know, from an accountability standpoint, and you and I are fairly full disclosure about this when we're on the air, I think that the accountability resides with the current administration as it pertains to the issue of tactical execution, right? And now I'm going to say that right off the bat, because I do think that there stands some bearing on the prior administration as well, and that comes from an understanding of why our military is the best military in the world. And when you start to kind of unpeel that onion to understand why that is the case, if you look at having 2,500 troops in country, anybody who thinks that you can stop in advance with 2,500 troops in country without some significant, you know, air power, basically blowing up bridges and roadways and stuff like that, I think that's a bit of a stretch as well. So there's no doubt that what we've seen on the airwaves could have been executed better, right? It doesn't take a military genius to figure that part out.
But that's the problem, though. I expect those people, I'm the civilian, I expect them to be military geniuses, right? I mean, that's what I expect from them.
Yeah, well, let me just give you this as an example, and I have several for you. But if you recall us warfighting during Desert Storm, do you remember how quickly that whole thing happened? It was just like a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Does that?
Oh, yeah.
So part of the reason why we're so good as a military is that we train mission, right? And so when Desert Storm happened in August, we ended up starting to send people over. We held down the line, and then we practiced. And then when it was time to go, we started launching missiles and bombs for a huge amount of time. And then by the time we rolled in, it was 3 days and the whole thing was over, right? And so if you're talking about a well-planned military operation where you're going to evacuate a country, I know your last guest was talking about it, and you referred to it as well. You talked about Bagram Airfield, for example, right? And the whole theory of you wouldn't really leave the airfield in the military base before you got people out, right?
Yeah.
But you were going to execute this with any elegance. You couldn't have only had that one. You really needed to have Kandahar and Herat and ground routes open so that people could get into these centers that are safe and then transfer from one to the other. So you're not going to be able to execute that with 2,500 people, right? It's just not possible. And so that's why, from an accountability standpoint, I'm checking off the box that, hey, you're in the current administration right now with this current leadership, and you are accountable for what happened tactically, right? But if you were going to do anything at a strategic level and have it execute better than what it did, you would have had to have significantly more troops on the ground, and you would have had to have the willingness start sending in Tomahawk missiles and dropping 500-pound bombs to stop that advance. That's what I'm not really sure, that even though all of us collectively are playing Monday morning quarterback, I'm not quite sure if we were really going to do it.
Well, I want to play that Monday morning quarterback, yes, but it, you know, the at the front of this, as I've said, is I want the Americans out of there. I want the people that we made promises to out of there. And, you know, we can talk about the scale back. If we're going to talk about, listen, I'm not here to say there's no responsibility. I think you can travel back in time. I mean, you talk about the Trump administration, you talk about the Obama administration. I mean, we can go on back on this, but the decision.
Yeah, you could go all the way back to Bush 1.
Bush, yeah, to be there in the first place. Completely. It would be dishonest if you said that. But what happens now is the decision of the commander-in-chief. And the commander-in-chief is President Joe Biden. And if he had that information, right? I mean, what you just rolled out, they could have done, they could have brought more troops in to facilitate an evacuation. He had the information and made the decision to do it this way. And this is absolute and abject failure. And I feel that the buck, he said in so many words, the buck stops with him, but I didn't feel that he felt that, you know, but the buck does stop with him. He's a commander in chief.
Well, Sean, that's partially true, right? And the reason why I offer that, the context of, we have to understand why our military is the best in the world. And if you don't bring to bear the things that make our military the best in the world, there's no decision that he could have made that would not have resulted in some chaos. You know, when I talked about it, I talked about bad options, and he only had bad options. And my belief is that there was probably a bad option that was not as bad as what he did, right? That's all along the lines of the accountability. But I just don't want to leave anybody with the impression that with 2,500 troops in country, which is the agreement that was made as we transcended from one administration to the other, and without an evacuation plan in place that was greater than 90 days old, there just wouldn't have been the time.
Then why go out and say we're out at the end of August and we're going to do this? Why not go back and retool this and set it up? I mean, we got the best of the best out there to make this happen.
I was going to say that part I actually agree with you on. And so let me just give you another example to put this in context. So my dad was career Army, and he was stationed in Korea in the early 60s, and the mission that we trained was North Korea invading South Korea. Right? Mm-hmm. That was the basic mission. So I was stationed in Japan in the early 90s. My brother was deployed to Korea, and we were both training that exact same mission in the 90s. Well, here we are in the 2010s, and people are still training that same mission now. And why do I bring that up to the point? It's like generations and generations and generations of training a mission, and you're taking apply that to something like this, and you're saying, okay, how are you going to evacuate a country of military plus non-military State Department people plus special immigrant visa people plus, you know what I'm saying, plus. What I'm offering is that's not a mission that we have been training over and over and over and over again for generations. And that's the reason why I'm saying there's a relationship between the number of people in country and what you're able to bring to bear in terms of logistics. We're surrounded by enemies in Afghanistan, right? It's not like we have direct access from the sea.
Right.
And so this is always going to be a heavy lift.
Yeah, but couldn't you have brought those extra troops? I agree with you, but you see that coming. You say, this is not going to work. This is a tactical disadvantage, so we're going to bring new troops in here. What we're doing now, we should have done months ago.
Right. So what you and I are talking about right now, outside of the political silly season, is that drawdown from 15,000 troops to 2,500 troops, which now, just to put this in context, you have 6,000 troops in country right now that's only protecting an airport, right? That's one airport. And so when you start talking about what those numbers look like, you might have been north of the original 15,000 into 25,000, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what I'm questioning a lot of the folks who are critiquing now, to say, do you really think people were going to be willing to do that and not come back with what the counter argument was, that was, hey, Trump would have had them out by the 1st of May, but now Biden's got them there, and now he doesn't want to get out this year. He wants to, you know, get out December 31 or something like that. That's where the political silly season actually, I think, prevents good decisions from being made.
Well, let's talk about this right now, and that is getting those folks out. It's, you know, a situation right now. The congressman talked about it last hour, where that we are not, because of some promise, and you know, as much as I am about being a person of your word, if I'm going to have to break my word with somebody, it's going to be the Taliban, that the English and the French can go get their people out, but we're not going out. You know, we're having them come into what I feel is like this trap, with the Taliban surrounding the airport there, having them try to get to the airport. We're getting their names to try to, I mean, this idea of, hey, y'all walk to the airport and walk through the people that want to get you. We got to tell the Taliban to stand down. We got to go out and get those people. You know, I mean, people that we gave our word to, we got to get those people.
Sean, I think this part here is the part that ends up being the most kind of heartbreaking. And let's use an Alabama context, because it'll just help folks get the geography better. So imagine we're trying to fly people out of Montgomery, but we still need people in Montgomery to get there, people in Birmingham to get there, people in Mobile to get there, right? Because they're going to be spread out all over.
Right.
And so really what we have to figure out is how can we do that in a way that's safe, that doesn't end up in a situation where a whole bunch of people are shooting each other. And I would argue that at the end of the day, we're going to end up having to go get people from somewhere outside of the state capital. And I absolutely believe that even if that's not being articulated publicly, that is a contingency that's being planned for. Because when it comes to American citizens and people who are over there doing jobs for the government and stuff like that, you're not going to leave those folks behind. Now, where it starts to get critical is when you start talking about some of the special immigration visa statuses. So the people who are translators or folks who are working shoulder to shoulder that made our military successful during the time that we were there operating at the tip of the spear. That's the group that I'm really worried about. Some of those individuals getting left in the lurch. I think that is a very legitimate concern.
Yeah, and I we make promises. You know, we've had... we can go back through even as recently in Iraq, and maybe people that felt like they had a deal with us to come over that didn't. We can go back to the Hmong in Laos, right, that worked along our special forces and military in Vietnam, and those, and there's stories of us not living up to. I'm not going to sit by and let that happen again. We gave somebody our word. We're going to live up to it.
The one thing that would have been interesting there, because I was thinking about how is it that you actually executed, is it's almost like you have to have this safe zone within the country, right? So imagine if, similar to Berlin after World War II, right? So you have some area within an area that's safe, and that allows you to do your processing, determine who's going to stay in country and who you're actually going to bring with us. But, you know, at this point in time, you know, after those particular plans not having been made at the time the agreement was negotiated, again, you're into tens of thousands of troops that you would need in order to execute that.
Well, then so be it. Then so be it, because I'm not going to, you make that promise. I don't care if it ruffles the Taliban, the first Taliban feather. I don't care.
But the question is, in terms of where we are now, it's not about ruffling the Taliban's feathers. It's like, are you going to get in a shooting war with the Taliban to end up doing that?
You know what?
That's the question
Yes.
you have to answer.
Yes, I am. You know,
okay.
That's it. So, all right. So we'll talk more about this next week. Remind folks they want to get more info on you, reach out to you. How do they do it?
Yeah, you can visit our website at kennedyforalabama.org. We have a section there with all of our historical podcasts. So if you want to go back and listen to any of the episodes we have previously, the one episode I would encourage everyone to listen to would be Season 4, Episode 5. That one with Representative Anthony Daniel and Dr. Nina Ford Johnson, which was the show that we did about COVID. A lot of good information in that show. So thanks a lot for that. And Sean, it's been good talking to you as always.
Likewise. All right, Robert Kennedy Jr., and we're coming right back to wrap it up here on the Day Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, and thank you for all the text here. Ones that move the top of the stack. Vets like my man Keith, we should have had a massive troop surge to secure the area first. A lot of people are on that same page. I did not serve. I have not trained, but I've seen this coming from, last week at this time. I said, there's no way this stands up. They're talking about 3 months or 9 months. I said, everything I was seeing, you secure the area. You leave on our rules, right? We leave at our discretion. We don't leave at their discretion. And that's the problem. That's the thing that has put so many people in danger and has just, frankly, peeved me off. We leave at our discretion. We don't leave it with the Taliban's discretion. We don't leave people behind because the Taliban says so. We didn't do what we did, sacrifice the people we did for 20 years there to leave on their schedule. We leave on our damn schedule. And I hope to see more of that happening. I know there's a pressure going on right now. It's makeup work from the screw up in the first place. I know so many more going in right now. We're going to do this on our rules, not what the Taliban wants. All right, coming up tomorrow, Chip Brown's going to join us too. Spent time in Afghanistan. What his story about getting an interpreter out over the last couple days. It's compelling. You'll want to hear that. Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson's going to join us, plus City Councilman John Williams and more. That's all tomorrow on Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum's show is on the way next.